And welcome to Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Beto with you for the next 60 minutes. Two ways for you to interact with us here on the program, 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. We're going to have two guests on today as we'll cover two more schools as we make our way closer to the NFL draft. Today is going to be Michigan State and UConn. Neither school has a great group of prospects in terms of volume, but there are two or three from each school that I think are noteworthy to get into.
Indeed.
That could very well be on the Giants' radar. And it's interesting, Paul, because, you know, when you maybe sometimes look at a school like UConn, for example, which is probably more well-known for basketball than football.
No question. Or women's basketball.
Women's basketball, too, specifically. Both programs have been very successful. But the Giants, if you look at least over the last decade, they've had a lot of ties to UConn in terms of either drafting players or maybe taking a chance on some undrafted prospects.
Well, you know, you're obviously referring to Andrew Adams last year,
yeah,
who wound up becoming the Giants' starting free safety out of necessity because there was injury, but he also did enough of a good thing during the course of training camp to earn a job on special teams and then compete for the job when Darian Thompson got injured. So I don't think there's any question. You know, the Giants are well aware of whatever talent may be on that UConn roster and has an opportunity to potentially be an NFL player. But you buried the lead.
The lead.
Preseason schedule comes out
today. How did
I overlook
that?
My apologies. 5 o'clock. 5 o'clock, folks. The NFL preseason schedule comes out today. How could you
bury
that? You
excited about that?
Excited.
You don't seem too excited about that.
I hit my head on the ceiling before.
Yeah.
This is a big deal. It's a wonderful day. It's clear. It's sunny.
Oh,
it's warm. And the NFL preseason schedule comes out today. Spring has arrived.
Dan, do we have the guest on the line? Can we move on?
I'm just saying.
The preseason schedule.
I can't wait.
Oh, well. You
the only thing that would make this day better is if the Yankees won their preseason opener this afternoon.
Preseason? It's the regular
season. I mean, regular
season
opener.
See, this is what happens.
It's kind of, hey, the way they've been playing in Baltimore,
well,
it was kind of like a preseason opener.
It has not been a good start for the Yankees
on
the road.
My goodness.
Now they're coming home, so maybe some home cooking in the works. But,
yes,
the preseason schedule will be out.
5 o'clock.
Be able to solidify the four opponents for the Giants.
Get into it, man.
I mean, you could tell I'm just overwhelmed by this news coming tonight. When the regular season schedule is released, then maybe my enthusiasm will go up a notch. Until then, I think I'm keeping things in check for the most part. But you are in an entirely different world, so I am not surprised. See, this is why NFL Network has a program tonight. The program is to appease to individuals like yourself.
I don't need to watch the program. I just want the schedule.
You just want the schedule.
I just want the schedule. The heck with the program.
And what
just give me the schedule.
And what exactly are you going to do once the preseason schedule is released?
I go right down to my office in my house.
Yes.
I pull out the calendar, and I circle those dates, and I write those games into the calendar with a big smiley face.
So no immediate film study or film work on the opponents in the preseason?
No.
That doesn't rock your boat?
That doesn't happen. But
there will be film
study of the Giants after each of those games because I need to figure out who
needs
to be.
Well, that's a different story, but the good news is that comes in August, and the last time I checked, the calendar is April 10th right now.
Yeah, but the month still begins with A.
Boy, we are stretching and stretching and stretching on the program today. Well, here's what's not about to stretch, and that's about the NFL draft coming up. And we mentioned off the top, we're covering two schools today, Michigan State and UConn. First up is Michigan State. And right now on the line here on Big Blue Kickoff Live is Jason Strayhorn, radio analyst for Michigan State as part of the Spartan Sports Network. And he is kind enough to help us break down the prospects to keep close tabs on with the upcoming NFL draft. Jason, you got Lance Beto, Paul Dottino here on Giants.com. Appreciate the time. How's everything?
Oh, everything's well, guys. Thanks for having me.
Not a problem. Well, let's start with the top prospect for Michigan State, and that is Malik McDowell, Jason, who's listed as a defensive tackle. I know that he's lined up inside and outside, and every time I look at him, he certainly jumps off the page, but he seems to project more to being a defensive end at the next level as opposed to the defensive tackle spot, Jason. Where do you stand on that? Where do you think he's going to fit in as he makes the transition to the NFL?
I think that people see his build, his frame. He's a little bit of a narrow shoulder, hip guy. But I personally, as a guy who played on the inside on the offensive line, do think that he's going to be better served on the inside, the interior, because of his quick twitch, his ability to be able to slip double teams and his motor and extremely, extremely long arms and his ability to anchor down and create leverage on opposing offensive linemen. I think that Malik is a guy right now hovering right around 300 at pro day. He was about 299. And, I mean, the kid's still well under 10% body fat and just a monster. I think he can really cause some damage his rookie season coming up here in the NFL.
Well, Jason, you know, everybody seems to believe, and I think it's justifiable from looking at the tape, he is a bona fide first-round pick. The question seems to be, how high can he get? Is he going to be in the 20s where the Giants will be picking? And, by the way, Jonathan Hankins is still not signed, which may make a Malik McDowell more attractive to them if he's there at 23. Or is it more likely, in your opinion, that he might go in the teens? Are there teams up there that have shown interest in him? And does he seem to be crawling up the board a little bit?
It seems to be. I mean, before the combine, it was kind of a crapshoot as to where he would be. But now you have guys like Baltimore Ravens. I think he just had a visit there at 16. They don't believe he'll be there by the time they pick at 16. Wow. I know that there's interest all the way down to the Seahawks at 26, I believe, and they definitely don't think they'll have the opportunity. So the jury's out, still out on where a team's needs will be once the draft happens. As you know, there's a lot of draft day trades that can happen and things like that. But Malik is a guy, I mean, if you get him in anywhere outside of that top 10, I'm thinking you're going to get a steal as far as the talent. From a talent perspective on Malik McDowell.
I'm going to be hypothetical here. Let's just say for a second he does slip down to the 20 area and the Giants are sitting there at 23, and let's just say that Jonathan Hankins isn't signed. I want to go with the scenario I painted to you a moment ago. How would he fit with the Giants, given that they've already got guys like Snacks in the interior and JPP and Olivier Vernon on the outside? Would he be a plug-and-play player for them?
Without question. I remember Jonathan Hankins, a kid from the Detroit high school, the East Side high school here. I remember him as a junior by for barbecue for graduation party. Definitely a dominating player out of Ohio State. If he's not signed and you get a guy, an opportunity for a guy like Malik McDowell, different body types completely.
Yes.
Malik is a guy who will definitely benefit with a guy like JTT on the outside who just signed his big deal, from what I understand. So, he is a plug-and-play player, without question. He's a guy that I've been around a lot of offensive linemen. They watch tape on him, and he poses problems for those interiors.
A lot of Chris Candy comparisons is what I hear when people talk about him.
Chris Candy?
Yeah.
Well, you know, that is a fair comparison. You know, there's guys that think that he's going to be even a Richard Seymour back in those days. A guy like
Patriots.
That. You know, definitely a dominating guy who now is just coming into his own. It's feeling healthy for the first time in almost two seasons right now, because he had some nagging injuries with the little, you know, ankles and rib injuries and things like that, but nothing that's lingering. So you get him, he's one of the youngest players, if not the youngest player in the draft at 20 years old, won't turn 21 until the end of June. So this is a guy who has a tremendous amount of upside.
Talking with Jason Strayhorn, radio analyst for Michigan State as part of the Spartan Sports Network, talking about the Michigan State prospects, focusing on Malik McDowell, the defensive lineman for Michigan State, a projected first-round pick. You mentioned that he was a bit banged up during his last campaign, Jason, and that probably is the reason why his production dipped a little, but here's something that I want to read to you from NFL.com in terms of what they heard from an anonymous NFC North area scout, and this has to do with the work ethic of Malik McDowell, and you've been around him, so you've seen him. Quote, he's just a little lazy, and I worry about whether he's going to be a self-starter, end quote. There have been some questions about Malik McDowell's work ethic, and maybe that's a production of the team not being in the mathematical mix this season because they struggled from a standings perspective. What do you see when you see Malik McDowell in practice and outside of games?
You know, Malik is a guy who really adapts to his environment. I think that he never got in a position as a leader on the team, as a first-year starter, as a true freshman, and then getting into as a junior this season. He's always kind of been a guy who wants to follow the lead. And now he's in a position where he's going to have to be a self-starter. But if he's in an environment with veterans that know how to put the work in. He was training, I believe, down in Florida, Port St. Lucie, around a lot of pros, and he got a chance to see what it takes. And when he's involved in that type of locker room, that type of environment, he follows suit. He, his father's an ex-Marine, and he understands how to work, and you can't overwork the kid. The more work, if he's feeling like he's doing a good job in the mode of working, he won't come out of that gym. And I think that it's just a maturation. You know, that's one thing about Malik. He's just got it. He's getting older. He's getting more mature. And now he understands what it takes in order to be, play at a high level in the NFL. And this is what you're going to get from this kid. This is not a guy who has problems off the field or anything like that. So I think that his talent and his work ethic will speak for itself at the next level.
Jason, you mentioned that you see him as a defensive tackle based on how he's performed in games. How is he against the run versus as a projected pass rusher? And what would you say is the strength versus the weakness of those two categories?
I think he's excellent against the run, being able to shed and slip double-team blocks, and his pursuit is great. I think his pass rush moves are need a lot of work. I think that's something that a defensive line coach at the next level is going to be able to really hone in with him. He's had a lot of conversations with defensive line coaches around the league. They're taking him to dinner and visits and whatnot, and they talk about him working on his craft, so to speak, and around veterans. Like you said, JPP, a guy who really knows those pass rush moves off the edge and the ability to get better and understand that, you know, he doesn't know it all and he's got to get better. And that's where he is right now today, a guy who wants to put the work in and wants to get better at the pass rush moves, which definitely need work. But he's got the motor in order to continue the pass rush down after down in those definite passing situations.
Now, Jason, I've seen cut-ups of Malik, obviously. I did not see any Michigan State games this year, but there are some other guys who may be late third-day picks and seem to be at least somewhat on the NFL's radar. I want to ask you about a couple of those guys because, as you know, those late draft picks can be important to fill out a roster. And there's a guy named Monte Nicholson, who I don't know how many of our fans here in New York know about him, but when I look at the measurables, at strong safety, 6'2", 212, and runs a 4.42 in the 40. I know he's coming off of an injury, but this guy seems to be like the type of guy NFL personnel people are going to say, well, at the very least, he's going to be a special teams demon for us.
Without question. They call him a freak here at Michigan State. His work ethic, his work out, his ability to flash on film, his leaping ability is off the charts. He's a great athlete out of Pennsylvania. And as you said, that 4.42 speed at 6'2", 212 is something that NFL teams are not going to pass up on. He's a guy who is learning the craft of studying film and understanding the position of safety more. He's growing into that role, but as a pure athlete, definitely off the charts in that.
How are his hands? Because maybe someone would convert him to wide receiver.
I know. And we thought about that, too. We were, you know, in the booth, we're calling games and said, man, he should play on the other side of the ball, too, and catch, just run a little go route, baby.
Oh, man. That's good stuff.
Well, on the topic of Monte Nicholson, Jason, you know, you pointed out he's a great athlete, and as Paul showed, you know, with his measurements, that jumps off the page. But, you know, I think the biggest issue for NFL teams is, will the athletic skill set translate to the NFL where we could actually utilize it and make something of it? Do you see Monte Nicholson fitting under that umbrella, or is he so raw that it's going to be very difficult for him to take advantage of that athleticism?
You know, I think that the athleticism will help him, help his learning curve. But Monte's got to take the film study seriously. And at the NFL level, it's a job.
Sure.
There's no class that's in the way. You don't have to worry about your eligibility from that aspect. So it's all about studying film. And when there was a noticeable difference when he put the extra time in the film room and practice, after practice and before practice, and the way he performed on the field. And that's something. As an older football guy, that you think is just an old hat thing, but again, this is a kid that's a true junior who decided to leave early, who's making that transition, and it's part of the growing up process. And Monte's in that same category. If he takes the game serious from a mental perspective, he'll flourish in the NFL.
I've got one more fringe guy that I want to ask you about, Jason. Prescott Lyne, the fullback, who, again, when I look at his measurables at 5'11", 246, I'm not so much concerned with the 4'9'6", because from what I understand, when he came over from SMU, even though he carried the ball some, he blocks like a horse. And, you know, I love the power running game, so a guy like that certainly interests me.
Without question. And the guy, he was a little upset. I watched him at Pro Day. Put up 39 reps on the 225 test, and he was upset that he didn't hit 40 for a fullback. He hits like a truck, yeah. I mean, he's a guy that I definitely think will make a roster coming into this year's draft at fullback and definitely on the special teams, a definite contributor. He has all the measurables that you're looking for a guy that's a fullback and a role player, especially on the special team. So I hope that Prescott continues his career and plays for a long time at the next level.
Well, Jason, speaking of fullback, a guy that started off, I believe, as a fullback and then moved to linebacker was Riley Bulla, who is 6'2", 226, and he's got pretty good family genes. If you look at other players in the family that went to Michigan State, and I'm sure you're very familiar with that, Jason, and his brother is now the linebacker for the Houston Texans, Max Bulla. I know he's not necessarily projected to be drafted. It looks like he could be an undrafted free agent, but, you know, given his background, given his physicality, how, number one, does he play on special teams? Because that would be important if he's trying to make a team. And, you know, what type of a role do you think he could carve out in the NFL?
I think that you're right. I mean, he's a guy that may get drafted, but definitely will get a shot. Because of his pedigree, I think that he has just a super high football IQ, going back to his grandfather, Hank, who coached Johnny United.
Sure.
Back with the Baltimore Colts. So, I mean, he's his father, his uncle, all played linebacker at Michigan State. I think they have a combined tackle total over 100,000 if you add up all the Michigan State tackles between his grandfather and his father and uncle and brothers and whatnot. But he's a guy who plays all out. He's a heart and soul of the team. He's one speed, and that's 100 miles an hour. And he understands the game, and he knows how to prepare for the game. So if you get a guy like Riley Bulla late in the draft or as a free agent, he's a guy who's going to work his heart out and work his tail off to make that team and to be a contributor on that team. If you can remember, Max wasn't a drafted player either. He was an undrafted free agent and now plays for the number one defense in the NFL. So that's what you're going to get when you get a Bulla.
Absolutely, and he wound up starting a few games due to injuries because of the Houston Texans starting lineup. So you're absolutely right, a family that has taken advantage of its opportunities. Well, Jason, greatly appreciate the time and the insight. Thanks so much for helping us break down the Michigan State class.
Thank you, Jason.
Not a problem. Take care, guys.
Jason Strayhorn, radio analyst for Michigan State as part of the Spartan Sports Network. Malik McDowell clearly heads that class, but, you know, there are certainly a number of under-the-radar players. And as you pointed out, Paul, when you get quality playmakers in rounds four and on, I mean, that's the difference between having a respectable depth chart and then all of a sudden looking for answers in the middle of the season.
Well, again, as we've discussed here as well over the last couple of weeks, the Giants are in a position where they're just trying to fill out some thin spots. So, to be honest, in my binoculars right now, I'm not so much looking at the obvious guys who are at the top. I'm really, really concerned about who are they going to draft when you start getting into those later rounds, because those are the guys who are going to make up the final five or six spots maybe on their 53-man roster. And trust me, folks, that's a good problem to have, because when those are the spots you're trying to fill out instead of three, four, five starting spots, you know you're a good team. And those guys on the back end of the roster, usually, at some point during the season, they're called upon to make plays, and plays that you need to be made if you are going to advance far into the postseason.
Yeah, if you look at the makeup of this Giants defense with the starters essentially intact again, if you're the Giants, you're saying, okay, well, how do we now get the second layer of the depth chart fully loaded with other prospects so that not necessarily whether or not they're going to contribute in year one, but you also need to think about, Paul, how free agency is going to play out and contracts expiring and saying, hey, if we could groom guys now, we put ourselves in much better position two or three years down the road that we're not all of a sudden searching for legitimate starters out on the free agent market.
You know, folks, let's not forget Ahmad Bradshaw was a seventh-round pick, okay? And the Giants did not know when they drafted him, that he was going to be a featured back. They certainly thought he had potential to be, you know, a third down back or a rotational back. But What happened? Well, you know, the Tiki Barber era was over, and the Giants, all of a sudden, they realized, well, guess what? Ahmad Bradshaw could be the featured guy. He could be a 1,000-yard rusher in this league. And what happened? Bradshaw winds up, you know, helping the Giants win Super Bowls. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, just because you may or may not have targeted the guy to be a full-time frontline player doesn't mean you want to cap his limitations and say, well, he's not going to be that. If you draft a guy, and this is why I always say to people, don't just ignore those third-day picks. Pay attention to them. Because in some cases, they're simply there because they can help your depth chart, and you know they're an upgrade over your second safety or your fourth wide receiver, and that's what they are. But sometimes those guys have a really high ceiling, and they truly are diamonds in the rough, and they can turn out to be something a heck of a lot more than what you thought they were. And that's why, you know, when you're in a situation like the Giants are now, and you're a good team, those rounds are important to watch.
You can focus on building beyond the starters. Paul Perkins is another good example, a fifth-round pick who may very well become the starting running back for the Giants. And Bobby Hart is another name I would throw out, too, a seventh-round pick that got starting reps on the offensive line. All right, we're going to try to squeeze in a few callers as we make our way to the UConn segment of the program. We're going to break down the Huskies class, but let's go to Chris in Connecticut, speaking of UConn. Chris, what's happening?
Hey, how are you guys? Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Well, thanks so much for tuning in and giving us a ring. So what do you got for us, Chris?
All right, I wanted to talk to you guys actually about two late-round prospects. I wanted to see if you guys knew anything about them. If not, I'd like to tell you what I think about them.
Okay.
So first guy I got for you guys, do you guys know anything about Michael Roberts from Toledo, the tight end?
See what I did on him. By the way, folks, it's here. It's done. All the film work. I finished it this weekend. Totally finished. Let me see if I put any notes down on him. I do remember thinking about him, and I think I did. But, you know, with all the literally hundreds of guys I looked at, I could not do off the top of my head. I'm not like Kuiper, you know.
Understandable.
But I do write notes down. Let me see if I have Michael Roberts down here on my list. And notes, I do. You know what I have for him? He played in line, he played H-back, and he also played a stand-up tight end at Toledo. I wrote down I liked his hands, his frame, and his blocking ability. I was not so impressed with his speed or the polish in his game or his motor. What do you want to tell me about him?
All right, so first thing, as far as I see, 6'4", 270. I mean, that sounds like something the Giants like. I mean, I think Adrian Robinson a few years ago, he's about that size.
Okay.
Then I see, first of all, this guy's hands are gigantic. 11.5 inches. That's 1.5 inches bigger than Odell's, 1 inch bigger than Hakeem Nicks. Absolutely massive hands, and just the size to be a blocker on our team one day. So I really like him.
Here's what I would tell you. They just signed Red Ellison to a rather large free agent contract for a reason. He is a guy who goes about 265 pounds. He is the blocking tight end on this team. I would say to you, I don't think they need another one. So I would, at this point, and this is a stretch from where I used to be, remember, for years, the Giants desperately needed one of those guys. So I was always after one of those guys. But now that they got one in Ellison, I would much rather draft David Njoku. Because I now want to see a receiving tight end to complement the guy who's on the roster now in Ellison. So that's why I would not draft him.
Well, the only thing I'll add is Roberts had 16 touchdowns this past season.
Understood.
That led the FBS in terms of tight end. So, I mean, they did use him in the red zone. There's no doubt about that.
No doubt.
For the fact
that
he piled up 16 touchdowns. But I would agree with you. I mean, I think that they've certainly pinpointed Rhett Ellison as their main blocker. And if they do draft a tight end, that would probably be more of a receiving type of tight end. But still a tight end that has potential to block. You know, because there's no guarantee that Ellison is going to be here for X amount of years. And you still want to develop a young guy that I think is a dual threat at the tight end position.
No, I'm not interested in developing a tight end right now. I want someone who's going to help them win now, help Eli get points on the board.
The point is, if they can come in already with a receiving skill set and you now need to hone their craft as a blocker, they can come in and contribute day one. And then down the road, then maybe they could become more of a consistent blocker. I don't think that that's something that's
I don't think he's going to be much of a receiving threat in the NFL, my opinion.
Well, we'll see. I mean, I think the way Toledo used him, I mean, I'm not going to say that I've been breaking down full film on him, but I'm looking at his numbers and I'm looking at the breakdown here. You know, the way that they utilized him, he's got 20 touchdowns in the last two seasons.
4.86.
So they did focus on him as a receiver.
4.86 speed, 30 vertical. And again, I mean, when I looked at the cut-ups, what did I see? My negatives were speed, polishing his game, and his motor. I see him listed as a sixth-round pick. So,
well, we just finished talking about grabbing guys on the back end of the draft
who could certainly pan out.
So, I think that there's certainly potential there. It depends on, like you said, how the team would want to use him.
Who was your early guy?
The next level.
I got one more guy for you, and I actually got him for from the Utah guy you brought on. I've been looking into Hunter Dimmick. I just love this guy. I mean, big production in college. I think he has a size that we could bring him in on a third down and be a pass rusher. I kind of see him as like a David Tolferson-like guy for our team. He's got potential. He's got a ton of strength. He's got some speed, maybe not the agility, but the team leader. He's a captain senior year, so that's another guy that I like.
I like him. He played in the 4-3 at Utah. I project him as a 4-3 defensive end. Things that I liked, I put down power, speed, motor, his ability to bull rush offensive linemen, and also very smart player. What I did not like, athleticism, didn't think he was very quick off the snap. He did have some trouble shedding some blocks and did not use leverage very well. I could see him as a third-day pick, though, and I like him as a sleeper. I think that's a good one on your part.
Awesome. All right. Well, those are my two guys for you. I like hearing you guys' input. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in. His sack production also is very noticeable. Yeah.
Off the charts.
Exactly.
When we had the Utah gentleman on who represented the Utes on our program a couple weeks ago, I can't even remember what day it was now. We've done so many of these in the last month. And he just was salivating about this guy's potential. And again, it's because of not only the production, but the motor.
Relentless.
That's a big deal. That's a really, really big deal. I think of a guy like Dave Tolleson.
Well, that was who he referenced, the caller.
Yeah.
He said that it reminded him of Dave Tolleson. And sort of that guy that you bring in for certain down situations.
Not just in his skill set, but in his mentality. And that's, you know, good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what's interesting. It's always seeing the guys that are going to go in those late rounds as opposed to getting so caught up in the first round class. And speaking of some guys that may go in the mid to late rounds, we're now joined by Joe D'Ambrosio, who's the UConn radio play-by-play announcer, to break down the Huskies class for the upcoming NFL draft. Joe, Lance Metal, Paul Dottino here on Big Blue Kickoff Live, Giants.com. Appreciate the time. How's everything?
Lance, PDOT, I'm doing well. Nice to talk to you guys.
You too, Joe.
Well, we appreciate you giving us a few minutes, and let's focus on two in particular that I think are noticeable. And we'll start with the safety, Obi Melifonwu, who had ridiculous combine numbers. I mean, his athleticism jumps off the charts, Joe, and we don't need to convince you about that, considering you've seen him firsthand. But, you know, we were focusing on the Michigan State class earlier, and they have a safety, Monte Nicholson, who's another one that really jumps off the page with his combine numbers and his athleticism. How do you think, though, that athleticism is going to translate to the NFL level? That's always what NFL teams are trying to figure out. So what do you see out of Obi that you think he's going to be well-suited to fit in with an NFL team?
Yeah, I mean, that's a $64,000 question, Lance. His size is great. 6'4", 235. He's fast. Obviously, that was seen at the combine. He's athletic. He was a four-year starter for UConn. He played in a couple of different defensive teams while he played for UConn. His coverage skills got better at the safety spot. He's a very good tackler. I think he's suited for a team that doesn't need him to be like the defensive back there. You know, his coverage skills are something that's going to need a little work when he gets to the league, but obviously when he's concentrating on football 24/7 and doesn't have to worry about class and, you know, talking to the play-by-play guy and things like that, I think he'll flourish at the next level. And he wants to do well. This is a kid with great desire. He was always a hard worker. Bob Diaco, who was the coach for 3 years and was a defensive coordinator at Notre Dame, and he's now at Nebraska, before last season said he thought Obi could be one of the best
safeties in the country. We thought it was a typical Diaco hyperbole, and while it was pretty hard to live up to that reputation, he had a really, really good year.
Let me ask you about his run support, because it's great to look at the numbers in terms of workouts and combines and pro days and that stuff, but ultimately, it's what a guy does when he starts cracking shoulder pads and run support that can really separate the men from the boys in the NFL, Joe.
Well, I think that's his strong point, to be honest with you. I think he's very good playing downhill. He led the team in tackles last year. Now, that could be because the D-line and linebackers didn't have as good a year because he passed on him a lot. But I think his run support is the strong point of his game. He's not afraid to mix it up. They would play him in the box at times, especially in a game like the Navy game where Navy runs the triple option and is going to run the ball a lot. And he flourished in that. To me, I think that's where he's best suited to play in the NFL, and a team wants him to be strong as far as helping defend the run from the safety spot is concerned.
See, now, a couple of notes I wrote to myself when I looked at his cut-ups, potential to maybe put on a little bit of muscle and become a weak side linebacker or a nickel sub-package linebacker. Might even play him a little bit at corner if his speed does hold up on the outside against NFL players. I did have a couple negatives that I thought, Joe, and I want you to address these. Looked like he had some trouble shedding blockers, and at times he was a little bit reckless in his tackling. What are your thoughts on that?
I would say the reckless in his tackling would be, I would agree with you that. I didn't think he was awful shedding tacklers. I don't know if he can put on weight and maintain his speed, but I think the idea of being a nickel safety back is something that would suit him very, very well. Mm-hmm. I think that's the area where he could, at least at the start, at least the beginning of his career, he could best stand out for some team.
Joe, you look at his size at 6'4". You mentioned perhaps he can project playing in the nickel, and I think a lot of people are also wondering, well, you know, maybe he'd be a good matchup for a tight end, given so many teams are utilizing the tight end at the NFL level. Can he go head-to-head with a tight end if they wanted to utilize him out of that role?
Yes, I think he could, Lance. I think that's another area where he could play well because of his size. He's not gonna shrivel at the side of some of the NFL tight ends. I think his size and his athleticism sets him up well to be able to play in that kind of a scheme.
Now, you know, when I went through the list of potential draftees, Joe, I have to tell you, you know, he stood out, but then the rest of the guys looked like they were fringe players. At best, maybe priority free agents. Maybe somebody surprises us and gets picked in the sixth or seventh round. Look, you know this team a lot better than I do. I didn't know that Andrew Adams was going to wind up starting most of the season for the Giants last year, but he came out of nowhere, won a spot as an undrafted rookie free agent, and was a big part of an 11-win playoff team. So are there any other Huskies in your mind that could emerge and wind up being pro players as rookies?
I think two, Paul. I think Noel Thomas Jr., who had a terrific year at wide receiver. I don't know if he's going to get drafted, but I think he could be like an Andrew Adams. He had a terrific year as a receiver in a team that didn't throw the ball very well. He could also probably help you on special teams. I think Thomas is one. And the other, I think, is the place kicker, Bobby Puglio. He had a terrific senior season. Kickers don't get drafted for the most part.
Right.
So he's a guy who I think could come out of the scrap heap and hook on with somebody. I think they are the only two, to be honest with you. It was not the departing senior class didn't have a lot of prospects in them. I would say Obi was far and away the brightest of the prospects, and Thomas and Puglio could be guys who could hook on as free agents.
Puglio, what's his kickoff abilities? I mean, you know, it's nice to say guys can hit anything from maybe 45 yards or in on field goals, but, you know, kickoffs in this game are becoming a real strategic portion of what these guys are doing in the NFL nowadays.
He had, I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, but I'd say 75% of his kickoffs were touchbacks.
Mm.
So,
Well, that certainly is notable.
Exclamation point.
Joe, you can't see him, but you know from your experiences, I'm sure, with P. Dot, he's shaking his head a little bit. That was appealing to him. So I'm glad that you brought up the 75% numbers. He's putting mathematical equations through his head right now, trying to determine whether or not.
I like sending that brain spinning, Lamp.
Yes. Oh, well, don't we all? Sometimes it's dangerous for the people in the vicinity, but I'm with you.
I would think you've ducked from shrapnel at times.
Oh, no doubt. Yes, I have my own off-season training regimen that I need to go through to protect myself with respect to that. You know, Paul brought up Andrew Adams, Joe, and I'm curious. You know, now that we look back at how he performed after the 2016 season, you saw him throughout college. Were you even pleasantly surprised how he went from an undrafted free agent, took advantage of injuries to the Giants safety core, jumped into a starting role, and for the most part thrived in the National Football League?
I thought he could contribute, Lance. I was surprised, as you say, pleasantly surprised that Andrew played as well as he did, especially for the team that I've rooted for since I was five. Look, he was a kid. Him and Melifon were a pretty good combination the last couple of years that they played together at UConn at safety. We always thought that Obi was the more athletic, you know, Andrew maybe the more cerebral, but he's a kid who always works hard, and I think the fact that he survived that nightmare penalty, special teams penalty against the Redskins, tells you a lot about his intestinal fortitude.
No, that's a great point. The one that came on special teams that enabled the Redskins to continue that drive that certainly jumped off the page early in the season. But like anything else, he redeemed himself and became a big part of that secondary. Well, Joe, greatly appreciate the time and the insight. Thanks so much for chiming in on this Huskies class.
Thanks, Joe.
Lance, Peter, always a pleasure. Thanks for having me on, guys.
You got it. Joe D'Ambrosio, UConn radio play-by-play announcer, breaking down who to expect to see in the upcoming NFL draft and also weighing in on Andrew Adams, who we were talking about earlier in the program.
Yeah, you know, I think the one thing about Obi, when you look at him, the numbers do pop off the page. And, of course, everybody knows I'm more of a film guy than I am a workout guy. But you can't ignore when the numbers are strong. I mean, in most cases, those numbers will boost a guy maybe a little higher in the draft than he deserves to be, in most cases. But when the film shows the production, then the guy's got justification for going where he does. And this is a guy who, I don't necessarily think he's going to go higher than late first round. I'm thinking last half a dozen picks maybe in the first round, but he could sneak into
it's
the
possible.
First round. He could also wind up being a very early second round pick. I don't necessarily think he's a fit for the Giants based on what their needs are and where they're picking and some other great players on the board at other positions. But, he's a local guy because he's a UConn guy. And we're glad to, bring information to you.
Well, and I think you brought up an interesting point about whether or not he's a fit for the Giants because, as Joe pointed out, and you had asked him if his strength is coming up in the box and stopping the run.
Right.
They have that in Landon Collins right now. So if anything, you want the complimentary center fielder, which I would also argue they very well have in Darian Thompson. The problem is, can he stay healthy and can he thrive?
And that's why I wrote down on my notes with a question. WLB, weak side linebacker, question. Because with that frame, I wouldn't be shocked if somebody tried to add 5 pounds of muscle to him and said, okay, you know what? We're going to make you a real athletic, playing space, ball-hawking, weak side linebacker.
Well, but here's
who's going to cover tight ends 30 yards downfield.
And if you want to go down that road, though, you have to be a team that can afford
that. Yes.
No, but can afford to give him the time, is my point,
yes,
to grow into that.
Well, I'm not saying he's a fit for the Giants.
No, and that wasn't what I was alluding to. But if you are thinking, if you're a team thinking down your road, then you have to say, we don't need him to step in day one. We're going to let that rookie season be the experimental season, beef up, get your body structure in place, and then maybe the sophomore year, second year in the league, you can then give him full reign.
What I will tell you, though, and don't, just sneeze at this. There is tremendous value, and I would not at all laugh about this being first-round value. There is tremendous value in drafting a guy who can play linebacker and cover these tight ends who are running 30 and 40 yards downfield in one-on-one man-to-man coverage. That's where this game's going now.
Yeah.
Those kinds of guys are going to have to be defended. And more teams are going to have to start looking for defensive players who can handle those guys. So there will be value there.
Well, I mean, it's something that's relevant to the Giants. I mean, how many seasons have we been talking about it?
Yeah.
It was even evident this year, Paul.
Well, Keenan Robinson was really good at it, and they finally got somebody.
Absolutely. But it took a few years to finally find that player that you felt confident putting on a tight end one-on-one down the field. And very few teams, you could say, have the luxury. I mean, another guy that I would throw out, Luke Kuechly comes to mind, the Carolina Panthers linebacker.
He's
a unique talent. You're not grabbing that guy in the draft every single year. So, I mean, every team is struggling to find that. All right, we're going to reopen up the phone lines here as we move closer to the draft and want to hear your thoughts on prospects, where the Giants may go, and so forth. 201-939-4513. He's Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow. You can also hit us up on Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. We'll get to some tweets along the way. We've got Oliver in Denver on the line. Oliver, what's happening?
I'm doing great, guys. How's it going?
Doing well, Oliver.
Great.
How's things with you? What do you got for us?
Real quick, I haven't heard yet. I love you guys, all the guests you guys got bringing in. It's real insightful. They know hands-on. They've been watching these players for the past 3-4 years sometimes. But I haven't heard any of you guys say, give me a three-round mock draft from Paul and Lance. What do you guys think, if you were Jerry Reese and Ben McAdoo and company, who would you guys pick with the first three picks, first, second, and third round?
Are we talking about players or are we talking about positions? Because I think, just personally, I think it's easier to say positions. Because with the players, I mean, the problem with that is, you know, you don't know who's going to be off the board by the time the third round comes along. I mean, I don't mind speculating about maybe positions that could be the focal point in the first three rounds. But I think with players, Paul, I mean, unless you have guys specifically in mind, it's very difficult to know who's going to be around.
Let's just say this, okay? My smile would be ear to ear, and I'd be bouncing off the ceilings if they got Njoku in the first, Moulton in the second, and Perine in the third. How about that?
All right, so you're talking about tight end, offensive lineman, and running back.
How about that?
Based on what you just said.
If they got those three guys, I would be absolutely giving them 5 stars plus.
That's awesome. That's kind of where I was thinking. They'll take Njoku. We might have to trade up for Ramchek or one of the offensive linemen that slide. I don't think three offensive linemen to go in the first round out of Ramchek, Bowles, and the guy from Alabama, Robinson.
Robinson, yeah. Cam Robinson.
Yeah, so I would love that. And then maybe go third round, go running back, P. Ryan or Foreman. I think that would be like a home run. We saw three problems, and our offense is locked and loaded. One other question I got for you guys. I know it's a sore subject with the Giants dealing with some of the off-the-field issues we had. One player I do love in the draft, his talent is there. He's a first-round talent, but I don't know if the Giants would consider him maybe in the third round if a guy like Foreman's off the board. But who I like better than Foreman is Joe Mixon. What are your thoughts on him?
Well, you talk about the Oklahoma running back who obviously had the off-the-field incident that led to him missing time in college. He certainly has talent. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But I think it really comes down to after, you know, what happened with Josh Brown and so forth, you know, whether or not the team would want to go back in that direction and give somebody like that a second chance. I think that's one of the biggest questions, much more so than X's and
O's. The only thing I would say is there's no question about his ability to potentially be a first-round pick. Well, I just put a couple of words in there I shouldn't have. You either say no question or you say potentially. I don't think there's much doubt he would be a first-round pick based on his football skills. The guy can do an awful lot for you. However, there are a number of NFL teams that I've already been told have wiped him off their board and will not take him, period. And that's about...
Do you think the Giants are one of those teams?
I will only say this. Last year, the Giants were very specific and particular about how they told us they took clean players with a clean portfolio that did not have anything in their personnel folder that could be questioned. They told us that last year. You would think that would be the same thing this year, but that's simply an extension of what they told us last season.
And, Oliver, I think if you look at the Giants' track record, I mean, they have given players second chances. I mean, Will Hill, to me, is somebody that comes to mind. But keep in mind, Will Hill was an undrafted
every
player.
Every case is different.
Correct.
No question.
Every case is different, whereas what I guess I'm saying is I think perhaps you're a little bit more willing to give a player like that if they're undrafted because it's not too much of a risk as opposed to if you use a first-round or a second-round pick on a player like that and then it perhaps comes back to bite you because of the off-the-field issues, you're not making up that first or second-round second-round pick overnight. An undrafted player, I think it's a little bit more easier to take a risk like that.
Awesome, awesome. Good information, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
And go Big Blue.
All right, okay. Appreciate the phone call. One of the other things that I wanted to throw out, because he had asked you know, the players that maybe the Giants would target in the first three rounds, and you threw out specifics, I would not overlook the defensive line. Now, I'm not saying that you were with the three players you threw out, but that is still a position. I know a lot of people looking at the defensive line and, you know, saying Hankins is still a question mark. They have some options, but, you know, if Hankins is still uncertain around the draft, this is a draft that's got a great deal of depth at the defensive line area. And McDowell, to me, who we just talked about, is a very attractive player.
Without a doubt.
And it's not so much because of what Jason Strayhorn said to us earlier in the program. Spags likes players that you can move inside and outside. Mm-hmm. That, to me, is why I think McDowell would be a really good fit for this team.
And he should be right in that ballpark. Yeah. Although, according to Jason, he was telling
us he could go much higher than
he looks like maybe even as high as top 15.
Well, I always like to bring up the mock drafts. Let's take a look at just a recent one.
But here's the thing. If I think Howard's gone in the top 15, I'm now hearing in the last few days he might even be gone in the top 12, top 10. So wipe O.J. Howard off the board. If Njoku is there and gets down to 23, or if the Giants have to move up a couple spots to get him, I'd do it. But short of being able to get my hands on one of those two guys, I'd have no problem if you said to me the Giants took McDowell in the first round at 23. I would have no problem at all with that.
I think it's great value, and I think it serves a purpose, too. Listen,
absolutely,
the Giants
does.
They always find ways to utilize their defensive linemen, especially guys who are very up high in terms of athleticism.
Just like if they wound up taking Zach Cunningham. Again,
the linebacker
I'd have absolutely no shake in my head at that, because the guy is a quality prospect. Value is there in the low 20s or in the mid-20s.
Yep.
Giants are at 23, and he somewhat fits a need. I'd be fine with that.
I'm looking at a few mock drafts, and Njoku at 18, somebody has him going. I mean, he's pretty much all over
Charlie
the place.
Charlie Casserly had him going in the second round.
Casserly, I'm looking at his mock
last
right now.
Last time I checked.
Casserly.
And if he wants to drop him that far, God bless.
Yeah, Casserly does not have Njoku going in the first round, so he has not changed anything. And here's the other thing. I'm not seeing a lot of McDowell selections here in the first round.
No kidding.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just
that
perusing.
Is surprising to me.
That's very surprising to me as well. I am
quality,
not seeing,
quality prospect.
I'm not seeing McDowell pop up here in the first round for this mock draft.
And
I see Zach Cunningham, who you just
here's what's going to make McDowell even better in terms of if the Giants pick him. What makes him a really smart pick is they've already got 3/4 of their front four established.
So it's a perfect spot for him to come in. The pressure's not on him to
exactly.
be a savior overnight.
He does not have to come in and get 8 sacks and make 65 tackles and be, you know, an all-rookie team guy. No, he just has to come in and blend in with three other guys who are really good at what they do.
Yeah, it's an ideal spot for
it
a
really
versatile
is.
Rookie because you got JPP, you have Vernon, and you have Snacks. And if you line up a defensive tackle, who's better to play next to than a guy that's going to draw a double team?
Might be hard to make your way through the food line.
Yes, it may be challenging. But, you know, the good news is the cafeteria stays open a little bit
There's
longer.
There's always the salad bar.
So he could. And I don't think the staff would complain if the first thing is for him to go to the salad bar. All right, let's head back to the phone lines. Mark is in Chicago. Mark, what's happening?
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
Hi.
Hello, Mark. How's things
anyway,
with you?
Good. Great in Chicago. It's 70 degrees.
Oh, it's 70 here, too. Very nice.
Yeah. So I know everything is really fluid, and I just sort of wanted to talk in general about a couple of strategies I think the Giants should take in the offensive line and also for running back. You know, the big elephant in the room is we still don't have any competition for Flowers. And what I would do if the right guys line up, and I don't know if it's Bowles or if it's somebody in the second round, is I find the best guy that you can coach up to challenge Flowers and say, hey, you know, this is a competition. You can beat this guy out. And you say to Flowers, hey, this guy you can beat out. And if by coaching up, I mean, over the past year, we've heard how Flowers is being taught the technique, but he falls back into his bad habits and he doesn't implement it. So I get a guy in there that I think I can coach him the technique to show as an example to Flowers, hey, here's what you can do, and if you don't do it, you're going to be sitting the pine, and we're going to put another guy in. I just sort of wanted to get your assessment of that strategy going forward, whether it's first round or second round.
Mark, I understand where you're coming from, but I don't think that the philosophy can be you're just drafting a guy so you can bring in competition for Ereck Flowers. It has to be the value matches where you're going to take the guy, mm-hmm. and then number two would be it doesn't hurt that we're also bringing in competition because we believe that he can compete for the starting left tackle job. But I don't think the mindset should be, you know, right now we could use a little bit more competition at the left tackle spot, so when we're in the second round, if there's a guy there and we're not necessarily enamored with him, let's take him just so we have somebody that could push Flowers.
I will warn you of one thing, and I will also tell you right now, Flowers, as we've heard from John Mara, co-owner here of the Giants, Flowers is in the weight room every single day and working extremely hard this offseason to get mm-hmm. better. And so mm-hmm. I am of the belief that his improvement in-house is really your best option. That is my belief. I will also add to you that outside of Ramchick, Bowles, and Robinson, okay, who some people think all three can play left tackle. There are some people who think that Robinson's going to be a guard and won't even be a left
Correct.
Tackle.
Yeah.
Okay. You're talking about Bowles possibly. And then on the second day, the only left tackles who have value in the second or third round would be Roderick Johnson from Florida State or Antonio mm-hmm. Garcia from Troy. All of the other tackles, and I'm leaving Moten out of this right now because Moten's really a prototypical. You know, he goes 320 pounds and maybe even a little bigger right now. He's a prototypical right tackle who may be able to play left tackle. Johnson and Garcia are the only two that for sure they're primarily left tackles. That's it. There are no other guys who can play left tackle and compete in the first three rounds of this draft. So mm-hmm. there's not much to go by there. I mean, and yeah. so if you want to force the issue and pick one of those guys, I think you're forcing the issue. Now, again, Moten, I don't think gets to them at 55 late in the second round. I think he's a higher pick than that, and he's a bona fide. He might even start for somebody right off the bat at right tackle. That's how good I think he is at right tackle. I think he's one of those guys who may be able to play left, but that's it. Most of your other guys, as I went through the film, I got look at this. I got Will Holden. I got Chad Wheeler. I got David Sharp. I got Andrew Bisnovati, I guess, from Pitt. All of these guys who played left tackle in school, they're going to play right tackle in the league. They don't have the skill set to play left tackle in the NFL. So why? You know, you can't take them.
And you're also listing guys that are projected to go in the fifth and the sixth
those
round,
guys
too.
Are third round,
so,
third day
I mean,
picks.
Yeah, I mean, those are guys that you can take a flyer on if you want later.
Yeah,
I mean, there's
no
question. Crime in that. But I think what mm-hmm. Mark, what you're
he
alluding to
is. He wants competition for Flowers.
Well Mark
these guys
wants
aren't going to compete with Flowers.
Well, of course. But not only do you want competition, but you want realistic competition. And if you
yeah.
can get realistic competition, you're going to have to take that guy in the first or the second round. And like I said, I don't know if the player matches the value of where the Giants would be taking under those circumstances to answer your question, Mark. And, you know, whether or not, you know, somebody who we're projecting is going to play on the right side is going to get some reps at the left side during spring workouts and OTAs and training camp, I think that's a possibility. I wouldn't eliminate it. I wouldn't guarantee it either. I do think based on what Ben McAdoo said at the owners' meetings and what John Mara has said also at the owners' meetings, you know, they are still supporting Ereck Flowers, and they believe that this is a critical offseason, and they're going to give him every opportunity to try to solidify that spot and take a huge stride here in year number three. That seems to be what the message is from people that have publicly talked to the media from the Giants. Whether or not that pans out during training camp remains to be seen, but I think that you at least need to put some stock in that so that if they don't take an offensive lineman and they don't sign another free agent, do not be surprised, especially based on what we've heard thus far from the Giants brass.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a lot there, and I'll just make one more statement about
sure.
Flowers and the question. Then I have my running back question. You know, to me, being in the weight room is great. I expect that. But to me, his weaknesses were his footwork and his hands. So do you have access and can interview them when they come in next week? And if you do, I'd like you guys to ask him, what did he do over the offseason to improve his skill set?
Well,
and see what he says.
Here, I will say this. The fact that he has been in the weight room every day, as John Mara has said, that tells you, I think, as to his mindset. Because for a guy who supposedly doesn't, like a lot of fans seems to think, doesn't try hard enough to get better and doesn't work on his technique enough, it seems to me if he is working in the weight room every day, then that tells me his mindset is right and that he is looking to put in effort. And I'm going to assume, and we'll ask him when we get to him, whenever that may be, I'm going to assume that he is working on his all-around game and not just powerlifting, you know, elephants above his head. I'm going to assume that there's a lot more there, and I think that is a natural assumption. You'll remember Coach McAdoo had said he was working hard. It was John who said he was in the weight room every day. It was McAdoo who just said he was working hard every day. So what does that encompass? You know, I don't think there's a fan out there who doesn't like Eric Flowers who can actually prove to me that he is not doing what has been said.
Mm-hmm.
No one's got any evidence for me to tell me no. I mean, so the next time I believe we'll have the opportunity to talk to him would probably be either at off-season workouts or OTAs or maybe the minicamp. I'm not sure when he'll be available to us. But I am sure the question's going to come up, and I think everybody wants to know the answer.
That's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, but I think the indications are good. The arrows are pointing in the right direction, I think. Sniff out the fumes. I think they're going in the right direction.
All right, Mark.
I hope so. The other question I have is, Paul, I agree with you on the power running game.
Yeah.
And I looked at tape on this P-Ron. He's really good. I would like to go back to the approach that we had back in the 90s, where we get a power running guy like him to be the, you know, the feature back, like a Hampton or an O.J. Anderson, and use Perkins more like a Meggett coming off the bench. I know he doesn't do punts, but having come off the bench, be that guy to change the pace, be the, you know, the screen guy. He just seems to have, you know, he has that shiftiness that I like, and as the power running back wears these guys out, they're going to have their tongues hanging out chasing a guy like Perkins around. And I think that would be a great way to use them. And maybe you start out with Perkins as a feature back, and hopefully it's a guy like Piron, and then as the season progresses, you move more to the feature run, power guy as your running back. Well, and I'll take your answer off the air.
Sure.
All right, Mark.
That would be a two-back system that he's talking about.
Yeah.
And I think the Giants, because of the skill set of Shane Vereen as their third down back, I think they're more inclined to go with a three-back system. It seems to me right now that's the way it looks. Because as you'll remember, when the Giants had David Meggett and he was their third down back, but then he also did carry the ball some. You know, when they had Hampton and O.J., remember, Otis Anderson was near the end of his career at that point. You know, and Hampton came in as a rookie, gained 500-something yards, broke his foot. O.J. then had to take care of things against the Bills in the postseason and then Super Bowl. But Otis Anderson was basically on the very last stages of his career, and Hampton was kind of just moving in to take over that lead role, which Otis was now relinquishing. I just think that they're more inclined to go with a three-back system right now.
Yeah, I'm not necessarily sure if they're more inclined to do that, Paul. The reason I bring that up is, you know, Craig Johnson, the running backs coach, when he spoke to the media following the 2015 season, if you go back 2 years ago.
Right, he wanted someone to take the ball.
Well, but they also wanted to have more distinct roles and not play this game of musical chairs, which
right.
they did in 15, and it was very hard for an individual back to gain momentum. Last year, there were some injuries, but we saw more of two backs would get the majority of the carries.
Well,
and I would think that that's the hope and the mindset, but I kept saying this. I don't look at Paul Perkins as a complimentary back. I look at Paul Perkins as a guy that can be a workhorse, and Shane Vereen can be more of the change of pace. So I don't know what that means if you then were to draft a bigger back, what you would do with that bigger back, because that means you're taking away opportunities for Paul Perkins. And Perkins, if you look at the last five games, including the playoff game, he started to get double-digit carries every single game, and his production was pretty consistent, and it was going up. That's where it was trending. So why would you now all of a sudden want to bring in another bigger back, give Perkins maybe 5 to 7 carries? I just don't think you're utilizing his skill set enough.
Okay, but I think you're arguing for my point of a three-headed backfield.
No, I'm arguing for I think Perkins and Vereen could be the 1-2 backfield. Oh, that's what I'm saying.
Okay.
I can see that.
I go back to Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Well,
in 2008, when Jacobs and Ward had over 1,000 apiece, and Bradshaw had over 350 yards, and he was the change of pace guy. In effect, what happens is he would become – Bradshaw becomes Vereen, in effect.
Yeah.
Okay, in this system. That year, Bradshaw only caught 5 passes that year because they were using Derek Ward as a third down back. But Bradshaw was the change of pace guy. In this case, I'm using Vereen on third down, and I'm going to use the other two guys to be the 400 carry between the two of them guys. Whatever.
Well, and I think a lot...
It's been done both ways. The Giants have done it both ways. That's the point. They've done it both ways.
Yes, they have. And, you know, I think a lot will depend on also Vereen's health and what he shows coming back from injury.
No doubt.
Perkins, to me, flashed enough and showed enough that I wouldn't be overly concerned about, well, if we give him 10 carries as opposed to 15, we're going to preserve him in the long run.
The Giants signing of Drone, though, to back up Vereen as a third down back seems to indicate they're going to go more along the lines of what I'm talking about, because then they wouldn't assign Drone to back up Vereen like that, because they got themselves a carbon copy of Vereen.
Well, and that may be also insurance because of Vereen's injuries recently.
Oh,
that
sure, but if they were going to go the other way and go with a two-back system and draft a guy to go with Perkins, then if Vereen gets hurt, it wouldn't matter, because then they would just push that role aside, you see, if they were going to go two-back.
Well, and then remember, you got Darkwood in the mix, too. And Darkwood, to me, is capable of being a goal line back if they wanted to utilize him in that role.
Got to stay healthy first.
True. Well, that's why you have multiple options, because some of these guys have been banged up. We are nearing time running out, but I do want to try to squeeze in two callers here real quick. And we should mention Thursday, April 20th, General Manager Jerry Reese is going to hold his pre-draft press conference, and there will be some player availability. So that will be at least opportunity. We don't know which players, but we'll have an opportunity.
Maybe Eric Flowers will have a chance to talk
chat
to
with
us.
The players. Correct. All right, so let's try to squeeze in these two callers real quick. We got Nugs up first in KC. Nugs, what's happening?
Hey, what's going on, you guys?
Come on, Nugs. What do you got for us?
I just wanted to chime in on what you guys were talking about. I think Paul Perkins is a workhorse. I think Paul Perkins can handle 15 to 20 touches a game between, passes out of the backfield and straight up running plays. I'm not hopeful for Shane Vereen's injury history. And so I'm thinking in the draft, maybe we pick up a guy in the third or the fourth round, but even between Drones, I look at Drone as being more of a goal line, like, you know, first and two. We ran into that situation a couple of times where nobody really had the girth to really push it in there from the five on in. So I look at Drone as maybe that kind of a goal line specialist for us. But in the draft, I just really want to see us focus on the trenches. If Hankins doesn't sign by the draft, then I want to see us go with the D-line, maybe pick up an offensive lineman in the second or third round. But I personally wouldn't be mad if we just went all trenches early in the draft or whatever. I think that with the pickup of Rhett Ellison, that's going to give us a blocking tight end / H-back type person.
Well, they put a premium on that position. I would not be surprised, Nugs.
No problem
with
that.
If that's the philosophy.
Yep. So that's pretty much. I don't see us having to reach to draft up. I mean, to trade up to go get Njoku or anybody like that. Because I look at it like this. I look at Njoku and I look at O.J. Howard and then I look at Eric Ebron. Ebron had better tape than these guys coming out.
Ooh.
I mean, in my opinion.
Nugs. I don't think Ebron is anywhere near the two players that we're talking about. I really don't. I was not an Ebron guy coming out, and I'm still not an Ebron guy.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. But I'm just saying, if you look at their college tape, Ebron's tape was more electric than both of these guys' tape. I just don't think that tight ends come in the first and the second round anymore and make a huge impact. I mean, we could take away Gronkowski, but he's kind of like the outlier in this whole situation. I think that tight ends have to do more with system, and I think our system needs more of a blocking tight end who can catch passes every now and then as opposed to
That's fair.
A the focal point being a athletic tight end that can stretch down the field, because now that we got Brandon Marshall, he can move inside and do a lot of the work that a big tight end will do. But, you know, that's just my opinion. But I just want to see us go trenches, trenches, trenches.
Understandable, Nugs.
I got no problem with that, Nugs. That's one of the core beliefs I have in football, so thank you.
I don't think anybody's going to disagree with
possession,
that.
Because you got to think about it. We had a top 10 defense with the offense that was dead last in time of possession.
Right.
What happens if we're 15th, 14th?
I know.
Well, and that's the goal, to get more progress out of the running game, clearly, this year, to have more balance on offense. And appreciate the phone call, Nugs.
Just to touch on the prospects we're talking about, O.J. Howard is by far a much better all-around prospect than Ebron ever was, and I believe Njoku is as well. I think both of these guys have much more all-around skills than Ebron showed coming out of school. You guys will remember, I was getting plastered with phone calls on this show, people wanting Ebron, and I was like, absolutely not. Do not take this guy. And I still feel the same way. I don't think he would have been the right pick for the Giants then. I don't think he would be the guy I would want now. I really don't. He's not as much of an all-around player. I think that Howard has proven he's an all-around guy at Alabama. And he's a man among boys coming out of school. I mean, he is by far a better prospect than Ebron. And Njoku projects to be much better. The only reason I say that is when you watch his tape, Njoku has played inline tight end before, and he shows effort and a motor and desire to block. Now, his technique needs some work, but he shows aggressiveness, and he does get into people's face, and he does get in their way, and he does try to knock them backwards. Ebron didn't show that on tape.
And Ebron also has been banged up since he's been with the Detroit Lions, so that's hurt his projection moving forward as well as his production value. All right, let's try to squeeze in one more caller. Stephanie's in West Virginia. What's happening, Stephanie?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I'm so glad I finally got in. I won't take long. Cole, I agree with you 150% on O.J. Howard. O.J. Howard is the real deal. I don't understand the Giant fans. He talking about he an Eric Ebron. The performance that sold me on O.J. Howard was the 2015 championship game against Clemson. He just dominated the whole thing. This offense will get right once we get that dominant shutdown tight end that can take up half the offense. And that I just don't want a running back. I want a power, versatile running back. I mean, a lot of Giant fans agree on the Pyrene side. But I love James Conner, too. Now, I agree with you, Paul DeTino. I don't know why Roderick Johnson not getting enough love from the NFL, because he won the best blocking, run blocking type. Offensive lineman award, you know.
Well, I mean, to be honest with you, I think he's a legitimate second or third rounder. I don't think he's going to be there in the third day.
Absolutely.
You know, but I don't think he's necessarily a plug-and-play player. I think he's the kind of guy you bring in. He's immediately one of your top reserves, and then you got to polish him up and beef him up a little to make him a starter. I think he's a solid prospect, believe me. But I don't know. You think that's disrespectful?
Oh, no. No, I think you're right. I think you're right. But third to fourth, he would be. I think he'd be a steal. He was blocking for Dalvin Cook.
And that's where he's projected to go.
Ramchak, Cam Robinson, or Garrett Bowles. But I will be real. Y'all know that I am so high on the tight ends. I believe this tight end class reminds me of that 2014 class.
There's a lot of them.
But let me say this. OJ probably will be gone. You're right. Njoku probably gone. I'm going to say this. I'm going to make this statement on BBK. I said it on the shape that I believe that Eli Manning would love it if we drafted Evan Ingram. To me, Evan Ingram might be the Odell Beckham Jr. of the tight ends in this class. I'm also high on Jake, but I know he got an injury, but I still think he's a player. He might drop to the fourth round.
ACL,
I like Isaiah Clagett. I think he's a good one. Now, I think this is a tight end. I think Jerry Reese may draft. I think Jerry Reese will draft Gerald Everett. It's something about Gerald Everett that spells Jerry Reese on it. Like I said last year about the guy we took last year, I said that's a Jerry Reese type tight end. Now, I want to say this real quick, Mr. Lasty. Jordan Renown tweeted out a list of projected first-round prospects that the Giants are high on. He had O.J. Howard and Christian McCaffrey. I do think O.J. might be taken, and they won't draft him. Take him. If they did, I would be so elated. But if they draft Christian McCaffrey, I would be elated and excited because I do think we need a dynamic pass-catching all-purpose running back. I want one with power, but he also has Zach Cunningham and Cam Robinson and some other players. And that's all I got to say. And what you think about that?
All right, Stephanie, appreciate the phone call. Well, we talked about Christian McCaffrey when we did the Stanford spot, and there's no doubt that he's got the versatility that's appealing. I don't know if it's a guarantee that he's going to be even around when the Giants selected 23. I mean, there's speculation the Broncos, who are at 20, could very well take McCaffrey, given John Elway's connections to his father, who was the Denver wide receiver. So, you know, there's no lock that McCaffrey's going to be there. You know, Dalvin Cook is another dynamic running back, too, that I've seen also in some mock drafts be tied to the Giants. You know, the Giants have taken running backs in the first round. So, I mean, I don't think it's a stretch. They took David Wilson not too long ago. But, I mean, if you look at perhaps other needs and you're not going by value, I just don't think running back is at the top of the list. If you're just looking at it through the lens of need, Paul, I would go elsewhere. If you're going with best value, I can understand why those guys are in the conversation. But need, running back would not be the first position I would go for.
I would only answer her question about the tight ends by saying Gerald Everett would be fine for me if they got him in the third round. He's not, in my mind, a first or second round value. But in the third round, absolutely, I think he could help the Giants with what he does.
And Evan Engram, too, is a guy that
I'm not as
high
on him, believe it or not.
You're not that high on him?
I'm higher on Everett for a number of reasons. We'll go into it another show. We're out of time.
Well, I think that she was pointing out him because of the Ole Miss connection with Eli Manning
and
so forth. And that's not priority number one why you take a guy. But I do like Engram. I think he's certainly a sleeper type of guy who's fallen under the radar amongst the other tight ends. That is going to wrap things up for us. Appreciate everybody for tuning in. Appreciate all the phone calls. We'll be back up and running Tuesday, noon Eastern.
What's Florida.
On the okay, Florida, there you go. Florida will be the focus for tomorrow's program as we will speak to you all week long previewing the NFL draft. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Have a good rest of your Monday right here on Giants.com.